Wednesday and laid the 7 yards of mulch. It looks good outside. Amen. And so thank you guys for caring about the church and just for your service in your heart. If you have a Bible, and I hope that you do, open them up with me to Ecclesiastes chapter 3. And listen, as you turn there with me, if you would, let's go ahead and stand as we read God's word together. We're going to be looking at the first 15 verses. It says this, starting in chapter 3, verse 1. For everything there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to seek and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to cast away, a time to tear and a time to sow, a time to silence and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. What gain has the worker from his toil? I have seen the business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity into man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. I perceive that there is nothing better for them than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live. Also, that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil, that this is God's gift to man. I perceive that whatever God does endures forever. Nothing can be added to it, nor anything taken from it. God has done it so that people fear before him. That which is already has been, that which is to be already has been, and God seeks what has been driven away. Thank you. You can be seated. Listen, over the past several weeks, we've been walking through the book of Ecclesiastes together, looking at the first two chapters so far up to this point, and if there's really one word that's echoed very loudly, it would be the word vanity. Now, you won't see the word vanity in our section of text today, but the theme is still there. Solomon, he has taken us on a very brutal, very honest journey through things like wisdom and work and pleasure. And with each of those things, he has declared that all of it is simply a vapor, right? It's all fleeting. It's all frustrating. Ultimately, it's all empty when we pursue those things apart from God. And listen, he's not being cynical with us here. He's being very honest with us. Everything under the sun, when it's disconnected from the eternal, all of it fails to deliver lasting meaning to us. Our lives, they move fast, and so much of what we chase after, it slips through our fingers like wind. And so as we come to chapter 3 here, Solomon, he turns his attention to time. It's just another thing that we try our hardest to control or to measure, to fill. Some of us even try to outrun time, and yet, just like everything else, time itself, it's a vapor. It's vanity. We can't slow it down, right? We can't speed it up. We can't escape from its seasons. Time, like everything else we've talked about up to this point, it can feel meaningless when we view it through a purely human lens. Listen, here's what Solomon wants us to see this morning. When time is reordered in our life, and when it's reordered under the grace and sovereignty of God, everything about time, it begins to change. Our outlook on it, the meaning of time, the time that God's given us. When we begin to trust the one who actually holds the seasons in his hands, and when we begin to trust the one who stepped into time itself through the person of Jesus, when we begin to acknowledge the great majesty of God in creating time, we begin to see that life isn't just a cycle of meaningless repetition. It's a story being authored by a sovereign God full of purpose in every single moment. Listen, as we dive into this text, the overarching question, it's not how do I control time or how do I better manage time? It's how do I live well in the time that I've been given? That's Solomon's point here. How do I live meaningfully in a world where everything is fleeting and temporary? Solomon's answer to this section, it's very clear. God is sovereign, especially over our lives and especially over things like time. And so trust him. Obey him. Live with eternity in mind. Respond with faith in who you know he is. Right? Peace and purpose, those things are yours, especially in this earthly time that God's given you. They're yours when you simply trust and obey. And so if you're taking notes this morning, I have 3 points, or really 3 questions for us as we walk through chapter 3 together. Point number 1, am I trusting God with the season I'm in? Number 2, am I looking for meaning beyond the moment? And then number 3, am I living fully in light of God's sovereignty? Point number 1, am I trusting God with the season I'm in? Look at the first 8 verses with me again. It says this, for everything there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven. He says, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to pluck, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to break down, a time to build up. There's a time to weep, a time to laugh, a time to mourn, a time to dance, a time to cast away stones, and a time to gather stones together. There's a time to embrace and a time to refrain, a time to seek, a time to lose, a time to keep, a time to cast away. There's a time to tear and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. Are you trusting God with the season you're currently in? Listen, as we come to this chapter, it opens with a very sweeping, very poetic list of life's different seasons, right? We see joy, there's sorrow, there's a season for building up, there's a season for breaking down. We see embracing and reframing. Solomon says in verse 1, for everything there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven. He's showing us life. It's not just some random set of events. It's not random in any way. Everything has an occasion. Everything has a place. For those of you that don't really know me that well, I love Lego. It's one of my favorite pastimes. If you catch me with any amount of free time, I like to build Lego. And I like to see the look on people's faces when they come into my office, because I'll tell them that, but they don't believe it until they see my office. And they're like, wow, you really are a child. But one of my favorite Lego builds, it's the UCS Millennium Falcon. And if you don't know what that is, then shame on you. But it's one of the largest sets there is. It's about 8,000 pieces or so. And it took me about a month and a half to build. And that entire time, it sat on our dinner table at home. Brittany loved it so much. But for about the first 4,000 pieces or so, all I did was build the frame to this set, right? Pieces or part of the set that when you go in and look at it today, you don't even see that part of the set. So over half of this build was things you can't even see. If you've ever built a Lego or maybe a piece of furniture, you know that success, right, it's achieved when you work piece by piece, right? It's using all the right pieces in all the right places at all the right times. David Gibson, in his book, he actually gives the same illustration. He says, if you're trying to build a model to match the picture on the box, then going freestyle with it is usually a recipe for disaster. You see, to get that picture for the UCS Millennium Falcon, I had to spend a majority of time putting together pieces that made absolutely no sense to me at the start. Maybe those pieces didn't bring me initial joy when I looked at it because it didn't look like a UCS Millennium Falcon. But to get to that picture, every piece had to be used at the right time and put in the right place. Listen, Solomon, he's showing his reader here that our lives, in the same way a Lego set is built, our lives are built piece by piece, season by season, occasion by occasion. They're made up of people coming into our lives at just the right times, right? They're made up of circumstances. They're made up of certain places that we're at in the right times. They're made up of certain experiences that God allows us to walk through. And all of those things, they're being locked together to make up our individual stories. Sometimes it's hard for us to see the significance of that tiny piece until much later on. Or sometimes it seems like there's a brick missing in our life. Or sometimes there's joy as a piece finally clicks into the proper place and you get that aha moment, right? Listen, the only difference between us and Lego, except the obvious that we're not pieces of plastic, we don't have an instruction manual sprawled out across the dinner table as we try to build that set. God is the one building us. He is the one with the instruction manual. As Christians, we hold firmly to the idea that life, it wasn't created just by just some random chaotic set of events, right? What we see around us, it wasn't created by non-living matter coming into contact with other non-living matter. It's not just some chemical reactions or this idea of natural selection or evolution. That's us looking at the picture on the box and us trying to build something without the instruction manual. Us trying to figure out how all this came to be. Life came into existence through order, not chaos. And everything had its place. Everything had its pattern. I think we all acknowledge that here this morning. We know the lies our culture tells us about things like creation and evolution. And yet at the same time, knowing that there's order in everything that God creates, we fail to acknowledge how God patterns our lives today. We fail to acknowledge God's sovereignty over our lives. Because let's be honest, not every season feels purposeful, right? Some seasons feel like setbacks, not steps forward. Not like he's building a greater build or something even better. And that's where trust and faith come in. David Gibson puts it this way: God gives us times and seasons so that we'll learn to be shaped by them, not try to control them. We're not the master of time. He is. So in every piece of your life, every season in the hands of the builder, every piece fits perfectly together just as he intended. That painful season, that delay, the joy, right? Every piece is part of something greater that God is building. The full picture, the whole of your life, it's being assembled by God one piece at a time. That's what Solomon is trying to show us here. Everything has a season. He's showing us that when we remove God, time becomes vanity. Because those seasons that are meant to have purpose, they come and they go, minus the builder. They come and they go without contributing to the larger build itself. And without God, those things become vanity. But when you see and when you acknowledge the seasons of your life, the author of your story, you're able to rest in God's provision and God's grace. You're able to rest in his sovereignty, not because you'll always understand the seasons that you're walking through, but because you trust him. Alistair Begg, he said, the doctrine of God's providence doesn't eliminate confusion, but it does give us comfort because we know who's holding the pieces, he says. That's why Solomon says there is a time to be born. There's a time to die. There's a time to weep. There's a time to laugh. There's a time to mourn, a time to dance, a time to love, a time to hate. There's a season for all things. There's so many examples he gives here. Yes, we're going to have some high moments in our life. We're going to have some low moments in our life. We're going to smile at times. We're going to laugh. We're going to cry. We're going to grieve. I mean, there's going to be times where we're motivated by love, and there's going to be times where we're motivated by hate. And it's okay to experience this plethora of emotions. It's okay to not understand the season you're in sometimes or to ask why at times. But listen, your thought process, it should never be, how do I get out of this season that I'm currently in? Instead, it should be, how is God using this? How is God shaping me through whatever it is that I'm walking through? Because he's sovereign over my life, and he's putting the pieces together. And do you believe that there's purpose in your seasons? Do you trust that? Do you believe there's order and structure in how God is building the story of your life? Guys, don't be like those crazy scientists who believe that life came from non-life, that life came from chaos. See the author of your story and trust in what he has written already for you. And walk in that. Psalm 139, we just read it during our prayer time. David says this starting in verse 13, "For you formed my inward parts." He's talking to God. "You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed substance." Listen to this. "In your book were written, every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there was none of them." That's Solomon's dad writing this psalm. What about Jeremiah 1:5? This is God speaking to Jeremiah, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. And before you were born, I consecrated you." Again, of course, he's talking to Jeremiah here, but this is the same God over your life and over my life today. God doesn't just have an intimate knowledge of you. Guys, he has a purposeful plan for you. That's why Paul says in Ephesians 2:10, "For we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them." It's the same language, right? In the New Testament. Or Romans 8:28, "And we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to his purpose." All things are able to come together for good because God's in control. Otherwise, it wouldn't be able to come together for good. We wouldn't be able to cling to verses like that. God is sovereign. He's in control. He's the author. And listen, for Paul to say that all things will eventually come together for good, it means there has to be some bad things that'll lead to the good. Right, for him to say that. Guys, acknowledge who God is, the control he has. Acknowledge his power, his sovereignty, and as a child of God, find rest in him through faith. Trust that your seasons, good or bad, they are being used to build something much greater. Which leads us into our second question. Am I looking for meaning beyond the moment? Listen, a lot of times, verses 1 through 8, preachers kind of isolate those verses to themselves, and they'll preach it by themselves, thinking that somehow they can be understood alone. But the real meaning here in this passage, it can only be understood by looking at what Solomon shows us in the rest of these verses. It gives it meaning. Look at verses 9 through 11 with me again. "What gain has the worker from his toil? I have seen the business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity in man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end." And so Solomon, he moves from this poem about time, and he asks us a very deep question. What gain has the worker from his toil? In other words, as he's been saying, what's the point? Right? If everything has its time, and if everything has its seasons, what's it all add up to? Like what do we really gain at the end of all of this? And as he's been showing us, the answer to that question, apart from God, it's nothing. You gain absolutely nothing. If we live only moment by moment or season by season, if we live without ever lifting our eyes above the sun, it'll always feel like we're just stuck in this constant loop, almost like a treadmill of life that never ends. And so we ask that question, what gain has the worker from his toil? And then he shifts again, verse 11, he's made everything beautiful in its time. That's probably the most misquoted, misunderstood verse in all of Ecclesiastes. It's not saying that everything is just lovely. That's not what Solomon's saying here. Solomon is saying that God, in his own sovereignty, assigns beauty, and he assigns value to the moments of our life, even the hard ones. Because listen, he sees the full picture. That's what Solomon is saying here. He gives our life meaning. He gives our life beauty. He gives the moments, every one of them, beauty. It's like that Lego analogy I used earlier. What looks chaotic in the moment, it's actually part of a larger design that we're just simply too limited to see. And so Solomon says he's made everything beautiful in its time. And then he writes, also, he's put eternity into man's heart. Listen, that statement, it's really key to this entire passage. God, he has wired you and me with this sense that there's more to life than what we can see right now. Every one of us, we feel it. We feel that desire for purpose. We feel a longing for justice. I mean, we ache for eternity because we were made for eternity. I mean, it's stamped on our hearts. We're made in God's image, and because he's eternal, we carry within us this longing for something that goes beyond the temporary things of this world. And yet, because of our state, the issue of sin, we can't really grasp what we long for. He says he's put eternity in the man's heart, yet so that he can't find out what God's done from the beginning to the end. I mean, can you feel the tension here in this verse? God's given us this desire for eternal significance, but yet he hasn't given us the full map, per se. We don't get to see how all the pieces come together right now. We live with eternity in our heart, but limits in our understanding. I mean, the point here, he's building from chapter 2, if you were with us last week. We're not God. We are finite, created solely for the glory of God. And yet our greatest desire, it's to be something that we're not, right? We want to know, we want to master, we want to solve time, we want to solve life, but listen to Solomon, we can't, and we weren't meant to. That's not our job. That's not what we were created for. And that's why Solomon ended chapter 2 by saying that work and enjoyment, things like pleasure, those things were all gifts from God. We don't create meaning for anything. We simply receive it. We don't control time. We live faithfully in what has been given to us. And as receivers, we have to acknowledge we're not God, and we have to accept those limitations that God has placed over us. We have to see those things as gifts in and of themselves. That's how we can live with joy right now. It's seeing the limitations that God's placed over us as gifts. We have to stop trying to be God. And at that point, then we can finally start enjoying the gifts that he's placed in front of us. Stop trying to control the gifts. Listen, let me be real with you for just a moment. Several years ago, we went through some really difficult things here, right? In our church family, we walked through a church split, and no matter how you want to slice that, it was hard. It was devastating. I mean, we lost brothers and sisters. Some of us lost family members through that time period. And listen, there hasn't been a week that has passed by that I haven't thought about that I haven't cried over that situation. It's hard, and I know you guys can feel the same, those of you that walk through that. But let me share two things with you about that incident and apply it to what Solomon's saying to us right here in this passage. Number one, God is sovereign. He alone allowed us to walk through that time for whatever reason. And we have to acknowledge that. That was a planned season for our church family. We're a different church today because of that. And that's not to say that we're better or worse off today. I'm just saying that we're different as a result of what we walk through. I mean, for those of you that were here, are you not different because you walk through that? Maybe spiritually, emotionally, physically. God used that season in your life for you as an individual, but also for us as a church. And you have to acknowledge God planned that. It wasn't a surprise to him. But number two, and I want to be careful with this because a lot of times we end it at number one and just say, well, God's sovereign. That's the end of the story. I want to be careful because just because God's sovereign, it's not an excuse for us either. I want you to hear Solomon's words here. Just because there's a season for all things and just because God is sovereign, it doesn't take away our human responsibility. God simply worked through our hearts and through our deeds during that time that we walked through to bring us to the place that he wanted. Listen, I think about this moment all the time. I was young in ministry. I was zealous. I wanted to be involved in everything. I was what you would call a micromanager. And let me just give you a little mini sermon. If you're a micromanager and you use that as an excuse for how you lead, it's just idolatry in your heart. And so if you say you're a micromanager, you got some idolatry that you need to overcome. Listen, I thought if I wasn't involved in everything, right, I thought those things wouldn't get done, or it wouldn't be done right, or it'd just take more time in the end. I didn't take breaks. I wasn't good at equipping and empowering people. I didn't do well trusting others. I saw the picture, right? I saw where God wanted us to be as a church. And I worked by my own effort to build that picture the way that I saw it. You know what my problem was deep down? I thought I was God. Because I thought I was the only one capable. I thought I was the only one whose opinions mattered at the end of the day. Maybe I didn't say that, but if I really searched my heart, that's why I struggled with these things. That's what a micromanager struggles with. And I'm not saying that I could have changed the season we're in, but I do believe in hindsight we could have walked through it differently. And that's what keeps me up the most at night. I didn't realize I had an idolatry problem. I didn't realize I was chasing after the wind, something that I can't control in the end. And that's what Solomon is saying here. My call as a pastor is to preach and to teach you, all with the purposes of equipping you for the work of ministry. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 11. And listen, that's why I've stepped back when it comes to decisions in our church. It's why I don't vote on congregational decisions that we make. It's why I don't sit in most of our board meetings every single month. It's why I'm not involved in writing the new constitution that'll be presented to you guys soon. Because I realize I'm not called for that. I am not God. I'm not in charge. I'm not the smartest person here. I'm not the most capable. I'm an under-shepherd called to equip. God used that season to redirect me, to grow me as a young pastor. But the point of me sharing that with you, if I would have saw the limits that God placed over me, that I have limits in time, I have limits in gifting, if I would have saw those limits as a gift in the first place, that season for us might have looked a little bit different. Guys, we have limits. We're not all gifted in the same ways. We don't have but so much time. We have 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year, and nothing you or I do about that will ever change God's design. God places limits over us. And when we don't acknowledge those limits and when we don't see them for what they are, when we don't see those limits as gifts, we become just like I was. We begin thinking that we're gods who have no limits. Why do we need rest? Why is it so important? It's not because it's a legalistic thing. It's because we're not God and we don't exist outside of time. We need rest. It was created for a gift. Why do we need a church family to be successful in the Great Commission? Why do we need all these different individual gifts coming together? Because we're not God who's all-powerful. We're a reflection together. Listen, I'm not saying I'm perfect today because I'm certainly not, but as I operate within the limits that God has placed on my life, it brings me joy. Right? Because I realize I'm not the most gifted here, especially with all these different ministries that we have in place. There is no way that I can lead through all these different things. I'm not gifted in all that, in all those ways. And I realize I'm limited by my time. I can only do so much. And so when I let go of things and when I begin to empower people or disciple people, as I'm called to do, I get to steward my limited time in better ways. And it actually brings me joy. My limits aren't bad. My limits are gifts meant to bring me satisfaction as I find rest in the only one that matters. Is it hard sometimes to operate within those limits? You better believe it. Like, again, stepping away from the Constitution Committee. That's hard for me. I have a lot of opinions that I want to share, right, Jordan? I want to be heard. I'm sure a lot of you guys do too. It's like putting your 16 or 17-year-old behind the car. Lacey turned 16 today, and she keeps talking about getting a permit. Thankfully, we just submitted for her her passport, and they have her birth certificate, so it's my excuse. I'm joking. I love you. We'll get there. But it's like putting your child behind the wheel of a car. How much control do you have? Not much. It's scary. But that's the point. We're not called to be in control. We're called to trust and obey. So here's a question for you. Are you looking beyond this moment? Are you trying to squeeze eternal meaning out of all these temporary things? Or listen, are you trusting the eternal God with your present season, trusting that he is the one writing the story, that he's in control? Let me say it like this. Meaning, it's not found in the moment itself. It's found in the maker of that moment. And because God's eternal, even the most fleeting seasons can be filled with his purpose. The limits that he has placed over us can be filled with his purpose. And so, what do we do with that? That leads to our final question. Am I living fully in light of God's sovereignty? Look at this last section with me again. It says this, starting verse 12. I perceive that there is nothing better for them than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live, also that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil, that this is God's gift to man. I perceive that whatever God does endures forever. Nothing can be added to it nor taken or anything taken from it. God has done it so that people fear before him. That which is already has been. That which is to be already has been. And God seeks what has been driven away. So to piggyback off of our last point, Solomon's conclusion here, he's saying we're not in control. Right? And that's actually a good thing. It's good news. Solomon says, be joyful. Do good. Receive your daily life, your work, your meals, your time. Receive it all with gratitude. And you read that, and it might seem a little overly simple. Like, if you've been reading along with us this entire time, Solomon, he's been really diving deep, exposing the vanity of life apart from God. He's been asking all these huge philosophical questions, and now he lands with, just be joyful, do good, enjoy food. But here's the thing, it's only simple when you actually trust the one who's actually in control. It sounds simple, but it's only simple when you trust God. It's hard letting go. It's hard for us to place trust in something we can't see or feel or touch. It's hard for us. It's only easy when you acknowledge God's sovereignty for who he is, that he's writing the story, that he knows the beginning from the end. It's acknowledging that his works, they're eternal. It's only when you actually believe those things can you finally let go and relax and simply enjoy the gifts that he's given you. And you're able to enjoy the moment not because the moment's perfect, but because you really believe the God behind it is. And so it's easy to say trust in God's sovereignty, right? But like, what's that actually mean? This is what it means to live in light of that truth. It means you don't have to obsess over every outcome. You don't have to worry what this moment is going to lead to. You don't have to obsess over that. It means you don't have to manipulate every moment, twisting it to your own desires and what you think is best. You don't have to have control of it. It means you don't have to panic when things don't go your way. Instead, live faithfully, do good, rejoice, be grateful, trusting the one you follow is in control. And why should we live that way? Because Solomon says, whatever God does, it endures forever. Listen, your efforts, they're going to fade. Your job, you might go into the office tomorrow, and it might change tomorrow. Your seasons, they're going to come and they're going to go, but what God does, those things endure forever. That means when you join him in his purposes, when you're faithful to walk in what he's called you to walk in, even when those things seem small, you're a part of something eternal, things that will last forever. That's why Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15:58, therefore, my beloved brothers, be steadfast and immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that in the Lord your labor is not in vain. So because God's sovereign, it means you're not spinning your wheels as you walk through this earthly life. You are sowing things into eternity. Solomon says, God, he's done this so that people fear before him. And again, this fear, it's not horror movie fear. We talked about this already. It's reverence, right? It's awe. It's trust. It's saying, God, I don't understand everything, but I do trust you know exactly what you're doing. And then in verse 15, Solomon adds this somewhat confusing line, that which is already has been, that which is to be already has been, and God seeks what has been driven away. It's poetic language, but here's what he's getting at. God stands outside of time. He sees the beginning, he sees the middle, the end, all of it at once. What's new to us isn't new to him, and what seems random to us It's already been woven into his eternal purposes. He's doing exactly what he intended from the start. Nothing's catching him off guard. And that last phrase, God seeks what's been driven away. It's probably my favorite line in all of Ecclesiastes. It's a beautiful picture of redemption. It means God's not just keeping the story on track. He is actively, it's always been his plan to restore what's been lost. He's seeking what's been driven away. Maybe you're here this morning and your story has some pieces that you wish could be undone. Some broken moments, some hard chapters. This verse, it just reminds us that God doesn't just let those things go. He seeks them out. He redeems. He restores. So let me ask you again. Are you living fully in light of God's sovereignty? Are you resting in the truth that God's purposes, they'll stand, even when yours fall apart? Are you finding joy in the day-to-day, not because everything seems to be easy, but because everything has meaning in God's hands? You believe that even if you can't see it. Are you letting go of the need to be in control so that you can worship the one who already is? A lot of you come to church so bored to death because you cannot let go of having control in your life, and you're not able to fully let go and worship because you in your heart are not, you're acknowledging like I was. You're not God. You want to really worship? See God for who he is. Trust that every moment of your life has a purpose, and that he is using it to build the greater picture. Here's the bottom line. You won't live well in the time you've been given until you trust the one who gave it to you. And it's going to feel like vanity to you if you don't live that way. That's Solomon's message. And so guys, whatever season you're in, joyful, sorrowful, rebuilding, uncertain, don't waste that time away trying to escape it. Instead, ask, God, how are you using this to shape me? How can I be more faithful in this moment? What does joy look like today, even here, in this thing that I'm walking through? Trust the builder. Look beyond the moment. Live with purpose under God's sovereign hand. Amen. Would you bow your head and close your eyes with me? Listen, as we close this morning, I just want to ask you to just take this moment. I don't want you to rush past this. Don't brush off what the Spirit might be doing on your heart. What season are you in right now? Maybe it's a season of joy, and praise God for that. Thank him. Rejoice in the gift that he's given you. Maybe some of you are walking through something hard, something painful, something that doesn't make much sense. It's like the frame of that Millennium Falcon. And maybe for you, you've been trying to escape it or ignore it, or maybe even try to control it and manipulate it. Can I encourage you this morning? Again, trust the builder. Surrender that season to the only one that holds all time in his hands. Don't get to the end of your life just to realize that it's all vanity. Ask him right now, Lord, how do you want to shape me through this? How can I be more faithful with what you've given me? Help me to see my limits not as failures, but as invitations to trust you even more. What are you turning me into? Because I trust you, Lord. I trust you. Listen, maybe for some of you this morning, it's not just about the season you're in. Maybe it's about the direction of your life. Maybe you've been living as if you're the one writing the story. Maybe you've never surrendered to Jesus, the one who actually stepped into time to rescue and redeem you. Listen, today could be the day you trust him, not just with your season, but with all of your eternity. And if that's you, understand the gospel. Every one of us, we're sinners who will die at some point in our lives because of sin. And there's nothing that you or I can do about that. That is our fate. And if we continue to walk through life failing to acknowledge the one who holds all things in his hands, your time will be fading and fleeting in vanity in the end. And eventually you'll be forgotten about. But God, who's eternal, he took on flesh through his son Jesus, knowing our problem, and Jesus lived a perfect life also that he could go to the cross as a perfect substitute for mankind. And on the cross, he wore the weight of our sin. He took on the wrath of God. In some ways, you could say he took on his own wrath so that we could have a restored relationship with him. It's like your dad coming to you and saying, you know, you deserve a butt whooping for that thing that you did, but you know what? I'm going to take it for you. I'm going to take that on for you so you won't hurt. I'll take it. It's an incredible story. But it doesn't end there. The story of the Bible, it tells us that to receive this gift of salvation, to receive this gift of life, all we have to do is confess Jesus as Lord, turn to him, repent, and believe that Jesus raised from the dead. Salvation is simply a free gift of God. And all you have to do is receive it. So listen, our praise team's going to play. I just want you to take this time, be serious about what the Lord is putting on your heart. And listen, when you've had that time, I'll close this in just a moment, but you take this time.